Welcome to the Focus on Why podcast. I'm Amy Rowlandson and I ask my guests one simple question. Why? Focusing on the importance of why, I share with you the relatable, uplifting and inspiring conversations I have with people from all walks of life. This podcast will encourage you to focus on your why to enable and empower you to achieve the success you desire. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to my weekly email newsletter, Friday Focus. Each Friday, I focus on one topic with one action arising. The link to sign up is in the show notes, or head over to amyrowlandson.com and sign up right now. Today on Focus on Why, I am joined by Isaac Kenyon. Welcome.
Hi, Amy.
How are you?
Keeping well, thanks.
Great.
Nice and sunny today.
And we have a thank you to Alex Staniforth, but he probably doesn't know why, but you listened to his episode and you reached out to me and said, I'd love to be on the show. So here we are. That was Alex Staniforth from 128 Mind Over Mountains.
Yeah. Alex and I, we both do different things in adventure and mental health. And it's great to have listened to his episode and see, you know, him using the platform for good. And I thought I could also use the platform for good in my own right.
And what does that mean?
Well, to me, to use the platform for good is to spread positive impact, to inspire others to, you know, achieve things and overcome hurdles or obstacles, to believe that they are able to make a difference and to find happiness.
All in one day.
Well, we can try. Usually it takes quite a lifetime. These things are always being worked on.
So tell me a bit more about the combination of adventure and mental health. How's that come about for you?
Yeah, that came about a long time ago. I'm now 30 years old, so that would have been when I was 18, 19 years old. And the relationship with adventure and mental health, that's kind of when it was born. And it developed from some of my deepest, darkest moments of my life. And it's been an incredible light for me. And it's got me through some of the most difficult times, and being able to understand that relationship and use it to get myself into a really good, mental well-being position, but also a position where I can help others. And it's been an incredible journey since I was 18, 19 years old. In long story short, nature saved my life. I was very much at the point of suicide and had some incredibly difficult mental health struggles. And it was moments of connection with the outdoors that was giving me hope and keeping me going. And it was, you know, how to explain, the adventure side of things came into its own because I found getting outdoors is an adventure in its own. Getting in with nature is an adventure. Leaving the comfort of home, you know, getting out of the box that we so live in our rooms and wherever we work and things like that, and getting into the wild, chaotic spaces of the outdoors, that has been an incredibly huge shift in my life, and has helped so many other people. And when I started sharing my story, the amount of people who resonated with it, who said this has also helped me too. Alex, for instance, you know, Alex Staniforth, he had the same sort of situation, I guess, but his mental health conditions were slightly different to mine. And yeah, it was such a journey that I'm still going on right now. I'm still doing adventure and mental health focused things, but I've also grown to love sustainability and finding balance and, you know, protecting the planet too. I've kind of given more back to nature in the last 5 or 6 years.
And what for you, Isaac, constitutes as nature?
So nature is sort of everything around us and ourselves. So I see us as part of nature. I see every object, every material, every single thing has come from nature, which is, I call it as the earth. Everything has come from some sort of resource. There has been some take to create such things like laptops allowing us to do this podcast and so on and so forth. But nature to me is everything. It's like a state of equilibrium as well, that requires balance for a healthy lifestyle, for not just humans, but everything else that's living. In nature is life.
And for you to share that you were able to understand the relationship, and you said that nature saved your life. What do you attribute to being the savior of your life exactly?
Yeah. So at the moment of reconnection with nature, it happened when I was at my least disconnected moment. I was so far detached from nature. I was living within four walls, doing my thesis and my dissertations at university, and focused so much within the computer screen or the four walls of my laptop screen. And I was not getting outdoors. I was not mindful of the outdoors. And what it is about nature that gave me sort of safety and the chance to open up and think about what I really wanted, the chance to reflect, the space to think. I find that in society, especially society that's focused so much around digital technology and so much around instant communication and so much around productivity, that we get lost in the fact that we are human and we cannot move at the pace of a computer can. And when I was at university, I was getting carried away, and I was, you know, all these productivity apps, and I was so immersed in contact time with the laptop, and I forgot about what I really wanted, and I didn't have any space to think. Notifications kept coming into my head all the time. You know, my phone was buzzing all the time. And when I got out into the outdoors, it was the one place that didn't want anything from me. It didn't need anything from me. It was like, I'm good, Isaac. I don't need you. I'm just going to be here and give life to everything around me. You're welcome to come join. But it wasn't like, you need to do this, or you need to like look at this LED screen, which is going to take strain on your eyes. Or it wasn't asking or taking in any way. So that's why I say nature saved my life, because it gave me that space and that time to reset. And I think sometimes when you're in a state of poor mental health, such as I was, anxiety was one of my major issues. I needed space to think, and I needed sort of mindfulness and things like this to come in to kind of relax me and slow things down, because with anxiety you speed up and you overthink, and the problem that can develop into a state of, you know, depression and suicide and things like this. So I definitely would say nature allowed me to slow down, and that was what was really key to my survival, and I think actually it's the key to the human survival as well.
And it's really interesting that you were speaking about the anxiety and the overthinking, and yet when you're out in nature, it gave you the time to think. What was the difference between the thinking in those different spaces?
That's a really good question. And the thinking in a productivity setting is, how can I do this? What should I do next? You know, to-do lists. Whilst the thinking in the nature, it was more about, how are you feeling? How are things going? Are you okay? It was like having a counselor, if that makes sense. Within my own mind, I had like a therapy session outdoors. And I wasn't getting that when I was, immersed in my laptop. You know, the computer never asked, how are you feeling? It's saying, enter this, you know, type that. It's asking you to do more productivity. It's asking you for things that you might not want. Then you're getting all these adverts coming in and out. You know, you go on your phone nowadays, you go on social media, it's just constant adverts. And this is all playing on the psychology of the mind to fill your mind up with things that you may not necessarily want. So I had a mind that was just full of junk, really, at this point, just full of junk. And I was in nature almost getting rid of the junk and filling it with things that I cared about as a person, from myself, you know, my own thoughts, rather than thoughts that were being implanted on me. And that's where I think the difference was. That was the penny drop moment. It came from a feeling first, and then I went into the science later and kind of understood what was going on.
And what's really interesting is that we're very conscious about what we ingest in terms of food, in terms of liquid, in terms of everything that we put into our body, and also what we put onto our body in terms of products and things like that. What about the content we're putting into our mind?
Exactly. That is it. Information. What information do you choose to take in? What information, when you say take in, it's going into you. You're storing it. It's almost, I think of this as like, what would you fill your house with? Do you want to fill your house with junk? That's what goes on in your brain, in your mind sometimes. And I found also at this time, I was a slave to appointments and diary and stuff at the same time. There was lots of meetings and things going on. And what I found myself was, as I was walking around from meeting to meeting, like driven by this robotic diary schedule, and I wasn't in control of it at some stage. There was a stage where I was following it. And that I think comes into its own. It's like taking into information, but you can get into a point where you take in so much content and information that you lose where you are and you lose your own timeline. And that's what happened to me.
And where do you feel in that timeline you felt lost? What was the moment when you identified that you were lost in your timeline?
I woke up in the dark, and I will then remember specifically having this strange ghost form of myself, where I looked at the time on the laptop in the faculty laboratory room that I was working in, 3 a.m. So I woke up at 6, 7 a.m. and I was working until 3 a.m. So I worked all throughout the day, and I looked at it, and then there was this ghost form. I took myself out, I looked at myself, and I thought to myself, I watched myself almost for a sec. I watched myself, and I saw that I had not even taken in the outdoors or even knew if I had seen daylight. I couldn't even tell you if I saw daylight that day. I was so engrossed and so lost in all this work and productivity and things going on, and life just going past me, that I didn't realize what happened on that day. And some people might say, well, you must have been having a good time. It was being really great. You doing what you love, time flies when you're having fun, all that stuff. And I was like, no, I was unhappy. And I was more unhappy that I realized at 3 a.m. I've been stuck here doing this thing that I'm not happy about, and not realizing that, there's more, there was more to life in terms of balance that I was missing out on. And I look back on regret like this moment in time massively. I was so unhealthy. And then I reflected a lot around, lifestyle choices. I would get takeaways. I would buy from shops breakfast and lunch just on the day because it was quicker, just to be more productive. I was drinking so much coffee, so I couldn't sleep properly, and it was all about productivity. And I wasn't doing much exercise. It was probably not my best health at that time, and it was nature that kind of reset everything, pulled me back into reality, changed me, gave me that time to think and reflect. When I was in nature, that's when I was reflecting on this lifestyle I was living on. And it was so odd because I could have had a conversation with a therapist about this, but I wasn't thinking about it being a mental health condition at the time. I didn't realize I was having an issue. I kind of did self-therapy, but I ideally, if I knew where to go, I could have got the answers a bit quicker.
And do you still look back on that moment with regret?
To an extent, I do look back in regret because I feel that I should have spoken up and said something earlier. I should have had the courage to do so. I know obviously there are stigmas and things around being the tough person, not telling people how you feel, but I do feel if I was more courageous, I could have said, something's up, I'm not feeling good. I'm not liking this. It took me to feel how I started noticing this walk I was having. I was walking through some woodlands on the way to the building that I was working in. I got to the state where that was my highlight of the day. Loved that walk. Just didn't know why I loved the walk. So what's it about these forests? It's just forest. What is this thing that's just so amazing? You know, I was hitting goals, milestones. I was hitting first class degree grades. You know, everything was pretty stellar. But why was walking through the forest more amazing to me than all of this other stuff I'm working towards? And that was kind of a bit more of a realization as well. And when I started doing a thought process of what was making me happy at that moment.
So with the power of hindsight and knowing the moment where you realized that you were unhappy, stuck, and you just shared that you wish you'd seen that sooner, and there were all these different unhealthy lifestyle choices. What shifted for you, and where are you now?
A lot shifted for me. So a lifestyle change had to shift. That was my first my first point of action. I had a to-do list, of course, because I loved to-do lists at that time. And the to-do list was change lifestyle. And then from that, there was a to-do list within that. But that was my first thing to do. So I started to realize that the outdoors, I loved it. I set myself some challenges to get outdoors a bit more. It was the first thing. I just thought, you know, this walk through the woods is what I like the most. I'm going to do more of it. So I started with that, realized, obviously, in doing that, your mindfulness, you're getting it. You're getting vitamin D. You're getting exercise. You're getting time to think and kind of meditate a bit. And you're also getting, you know, endorphins and things like that. So all these happy brain chemicals I was depleting were coming back from this one act of just getting outdoors. And there was a lot of wins with just increasing that. So that was the lifestyle change to incorporate more outdoors was important. And then I started to increase the amount of sport I was doing. And I did get to a point where I had to make a decision where there was a critical moment where I had to make a decision of, I do not care what grade I get now. I am so unhappy. I couldn't care less. And I just had to just take ownership. Once I started dropping that sort of productivity and those high goals that I set myself, everything started to get better. And I started to find a bit balanced. And then, in fact, my actual grades improved from doing less and being healthier. And that in itself is, you know, feels obvious. Obvious your grades would be, Isaac. But when you're in that moment and you're, you know, getting carried away with it and you're seeing, oh, I've got a bit of energy. I could squeeze another hour here. And then that becomes a habit. Oh, now you're doing 9 hour days. And then the next day you're like, oh, I could do another hour here. Then it's 10 hour days. And then it's 11 hour days and 12 hour days, 13 hour. And then you realize that actually you're going into your own sort of productivity demise, I call it. And yeah, so what I was doing is changing lifestyle so that I was preventing myself. I made strict time differences, work time differences. You know, 9 hours from here to here, that's it, work. Outside of those hours, no. I made sure that later on to develop my diet, I knew that I was eating junk food. I knew I was eating junk food. I was just doing it because it was quicker. And I decided now I've got all this other time because I've made strict work hours, I can now make my own dinners. And that was great. So yeah, lifestyle was the first stage. And it was, I think I'd say to any person that is looking to make a change is look at what you're doing now, every facet of your life. How do you spend your hours throughout the day? What do you consume? As you know, I loved how you spoke about that, Amy, around, you know, what you eat, and we think about, you know, what we take in, basically. I think what information are you consuming, and that side of things is really important. So yeah, the lifestyle change was huge. But that had to have a behavior change first. And that was that penny drop moment. And I found the behavior change first, the lifestyle change came after.
And what is it that you're now doing? You mentioned about helping people to make a difference and have happiness as part of that, as well as that package of overcoming hurdles and spreading a positive impact.
Yes. So I'm getting into a sort of a big purpose driven why, which is around empowering individuals to take ownership of their mental health, to support each other and give back to the environment. And that's kind of my big why and what I'm doing. This is sort of where all of this has come into its own. And the reason I've chosen that as my purpose or why, and everything I do is now stemming from this. And speaking, for instance, helps empower people to take ownership of their mental health. Also empowers people to maybe protect the environment or, you know, work better in a team. And those things are important, but I also do adventure experiences as well to reconnect people with the outdoors. And that reconnection is what helped me. And sometimes, you know, 10 people might come on one of these trips. One may say, this was amazing. That for me is great impact. Even if just one person said, you know, this has changed my life. And when they say that, they mean they've changed their lifestyle and their behavior. And if it's making a positive impact, it's making them feel happier, then I'm feeling great about that, because deep down, I don't want anyone to have gone through the trauma that I've went through. I followed, I guess societal's productivity, capitalistic route. You know, I was just pumping out more and more of my effort and time to make better grades or results or returns, you know, whatever you want to call it. I was in that flow. And I was giving more to this than I was to myself. And I now empower people to sort of look at themselves and make sure that they're getting benefits too. And so is the environment and the people around them. And the reason why I say environment is because without a stable environment, we don't have a stable world, which again will be a knock-on effect for everybody, won't it? Because we don't have a good environment, then we're all suffering. And if we don't have good mental health, then the individual suffers. And if our team is unhappy, then, you know, the team suffers and you're part of that team. So then it's going to suffer together, right? So let's empower to do positive change within our teams, the environment and the mental health of each other. So that's what I'm working on.
And tell me the importance of adventure and how that fits into the work that you're doing, but also what that gives the individual and those around them in, as part of an adventure.
Yeah. So my definition of adventure is taking a leap of faith to try something new and see how it goes. So adventure for me could be writing a book or, you know, changing your job, or, you know, it's a journey. It's doing something you've not done before. And adventure for me is fundamentally a mindset that allowed one to change their lifestyle or change their behavior so that they can better themselves or improve their happiness levels. And, you know, sometimes if you're unhappy and you're just stuck in a rut, that unhappiness can get worse and worse and worse over time. And the fear of going outside of your comfort zone to try something new is holding you back to move out of that happiness, unhappiness world that you're in. That happened to me. You know, there was a bit of a fear to jump into this outdoor lifestyle thing, but I just thought, you know what, life can't be worse. I'm thinking of taking my life here. I'm going to take the leap. And I changed my lifestyle. And that for me was the biggest adventure of all. I've done all these world records and big things, rowing across oceans and incredible adventures that people say impossible, but deep down my biggest adventure was taking ownership of my mental well-being and changing my lifestyle. That was my biggest adventure, and I'm still on that journey now.
And that shouldn't be underestimated. You're absolutely right. You know, it's easy to quantify and measure a world record or attempt in an adventure. So you know, it's because people can say, well, it go from A to B in a shortest time. taking control and ownership of your own mindset is not measurable. You don't, you know, it's not something that you can easily quantify and qualify.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I love that statement. I am struggling still to try and quantify it, but I think the impact and the happiness levels post doing the lifestyle change have been far greater during those 2 years of, like, I call it hell on earth that I was in. So I don't need numbers to prove that it was a good move or a good adventure, but I do feel it was a great adventure.
And for this incredible adventure mindset that you've got, what is it that you would like to achieve in terms of encouraging others to join you on this adventure that you're on?
Yeah, I mean, if we could all live in a world where we're not in the state of depression or we're not developing poor mental health issues, or a world where we're not losing X amount of people per year, that for me is like a goal worth working towards. And that for me is kind of my achievement would be to have an impact to help as many people to come out of these dark moments as possible. And a lot of the time, speaking with lots of mental health experts that I work with, it is lifestyle and behavior, and it's a mindset thing that gets you out of these difficult moments. And more often than not, there isn't enough support around the mind for everyone in the world. But there are a lot of people who have platforms that can spread awareness messages that can kind of give you that moment where, actually, you know, that person's making some sense here to me, that's resonating. And if I can be that person who helps that person resonate, they just listen to, you know, what we were talking about, and it inspires them to take some form of action on lifestyle change, that is a big achievement as well.
And what is the role of meaning and purpose in all of this for you, Isaac?
I think without a purpose, it can be quite easy to follow the journey that others lay out for you. So I found that during those 2 years of deep unhappiness that I was in, I was following steps carved by others for me, and I wasn't following what I wanted to do. And that was manifesting in negative ways. So when I came out of the difficult spell and I reconnected with nature and I realized I wanted to get more outdoors, I wanted to help others reconnect with nature because it's so great, and I wanted to protect nature, that was the moment where I got my purpose for the first time in my life. Up until that point, I was following carved footsteps from others, and it came to a point where I was so unhappy that I wanted to take my own life. And I think having a purpose that is made from yourself, that comes from within, not from what your parents may have said to you, what your teacher may have said to you, what your friend may have said to you, comes from yourself. You know, I'm not going to come on here and say your purpose should be this. You know, I think it's very important that it comes from within. And that is my sort of view on this.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I totally understand how you can get swept up in other people's dreams and journeys. And if you don't have a clear intention yourself of what it is that you want to create in the world, then you do follow the paths of others and realize that there is going to be likely to be an incongruence with your own values. And as a result, it's where people fall into the spell or the myth that you find your purpose, because they see other people who have perceived or are perceived to have found it. And it's not true. You build it, you create it. It comes from within, and it is something that is unique to you. And you're absolutely right. It's not something that can be prescribed. And that's why in this podcast, I've had hundreds of people talking about their purpose and very few are the same, if any. You know, none are identical. Everyone's got their own journey that they're on with their own purpose. And it's so important for me to help people to understand that that is the case, that, you know, you have your own unique path to carve in life.
I agree with that. And it was great to know you, and that you have met so many people who've done this, because it shows, or anyone listening will hear, that there's so many ways you can go about it. It doesn't have to be one fits all. You can take inspiration from lots of different places. Please don't take inspiration from AI. I'd love to hear your view on AI at some point anyway, around purpose, because and ways of doing things, because it's such a tool that can be used to create creativity for oneself without being creative. And I find it incredibly interesting to see how this will impact society, and how people's purpose may change, because loads of the jobs will not be perhaps available in the future, and you don't need to think anymore, because you can create from using something that creates for you. And it's interesting.
Yeah, I have just written a book about purpose, and you'll be pleased to hear that AI does not feature in it once. Now, there are exercises at the end of each chapter, which are reflection with action. And reflection for me is about understanding what has happened in the past. Action is how you can put your purpose into motion. So it's a combination of the two. And I don't think that you can necessarily, you can't go elsewhere. It's about, for you personally, that journey of the reflection with action process is, and there are lots of different exercises, exploring lots of different ways. And yes, going out into nature, walking outside is often where you have those most creative moments. Even being in the shower is where you have those most creative moments. My goodness, I call them shower moments. And yeah, I mean, that's not an original name. It's a fact. Everybody has these moments. But when you're sitting watching the rain trickle down the window, those moments of daydream, or when you first wake up in that sort of alpha frequency, is a powerful creative state. And often that's when, if you get pen to paper journaling, you take down some really curious ways of exploring, and you can adventure that way. But absolutely, it's so key to understand that everyone is creative. And I think that that's a block that many people have, that they don't feel they are a creative people or individual themselves. And it's just not true. It's just a case of, how are you allowing that creativity to manifest within?
Totally, totally. And when you said people don't feel that, they can be creative, more often than not, I get, "You're crazy. That's impossible. Why would you do that?" I get so many negative comments regarding me doing these moments of creation I've come up with in my brain, in my thinking, from nature's gift sometimes. But going outdoors and doing these adventures, I'm always often seen as, "Oh, the crazy one, you're the mad one." And I just think to myself, well, I'm just following my own creative goals, like the things that I'm coming from within. It was alarming to hear that from so many people, because it makes me feel like, if they're not open to someone else's creative goals, are they open to their own? And that's where I was like, right, I want to make an impact and try and help people, come to terms with their own sort of mental well-being, protecting the environment, things like this, because that helps breed that process, doesn't it? And I'm sure this podcast does too. And help people think about their own purpose. But it was scary to be called crazy so much. And I always say that to people, like, "You calling me crazy, but have you got any ideas about your own things that you're willing to share?" I'm sure they have ideas, but they won't share them.
It definitely says more about them than it does about you, Isaac. In terms of, you're willing to take a risk. You're willing to try things out. You're willing to explore. And if you think about all the great things that have been created by accident, for example. So inventions that have been created from trying to create something else. And then as a byproduct, that's happened. So whether it be slinky toy or post-it notes or penicillin or whatever those inventions are, they were sort of accidental. And so what happens when you're creative is that you have that opportunity to see things that might not ever have happened or occurred, or and it is taking a risk. It is, as you said, the hardest thing for you was that taking ownership and taking ownership of an idea and taking it into fruition is really admirable. And as I said, it will inspire some, and it will also inject some fear in others, but it says more about them than it does about you.
Yeah, definitely. It was that, you know, that moment when I did go outdoors for not the first time, of course, the time I realized it was good for me, that, so I call it my first reconnection. That moment there was an incredible creativity thought process that changed everything, where I had to believe this thing was helping me. I had to sit there and be like, do you know what? I have a hypothesis. This is helping me. This is helping me. And if I didn't have that thinking, I may never have carried on. So yeah, it was good.
I'm sure all of your adventures have been exciting for different reasons, but is there one that you'd like to share with us for a specific reason?
Yeah, I have one special adventure that I think actually brought the why in its own. And it was the 40-day Atlantic Row Challenge. And what was special about that adventure, and why I want to share it in this podcast around the why message, was that it was the first time in an adventure setting where the combination of different people's whys mattered a lot. So it was very interesting, as we had a team of four who rowed across the Atlantic Ocean. All four of us had different visions and goals and aspirations and whys and purposes and things like this. And it was one adventure where it wasn't just a one day, it was a 40-day challenge. You're completely out at sea. You're reliant on each other all the way through it. It's a team effort. And when you're out in the ocean, there isn't the get me out of here sort of thing. It's quite tough to get evacuated. And, you know, things are difficult out there. Big 20-foot rolling storms, seas made by storms and things like this. It's very adverse. And what I loved about that adventure was that despite having different whys, I was with individuals who had their own purposes, had found their own goals and were very driven. But despite all our differences, we were able to come together on a common goal. And that was the first time I realized that it matters a lot that your purpose meets other people's purposes for your own happiness. When I came to terms with my poor mental health and made that my own sort of purpose out of the recovery process using nature, I realized at that point that these were the things that mattered to me, but I was still working jobs or doing things that weren't aligned. And when I came to building this team for the Atlantic Row Challenge, I realized that if these things aren't aligned or the purposes aren't aligned amongst the team, it can be quite difficult and challenging, and perhaps may never happen. And then I came to recollection that, well, maybe I should be thinking about that around my job, you know, around my relationships, everything. Otherwise, I'm just causing friction with my true meaning. So that Atlantic Row Challenge, when I started building a team, I realized actually that I needed to think about how does my why fit in the wider world in all other contexts? So not only being strong to myself and having my own creative purpose, but also how does my creative purpose fit in with the world around me? And I did realize that perhaps it was quite different. You know, it didn't really fit the purpose of a bank, for instance. You know, I wasn't fitting in with a lot of companies. So that was a big eye opener for me. And when the team and us, well, when the team came together for the first time, we started talking about our goals for the challenge and what we wanted to achieve. And knowing that there were so many differences, we had to come to terms with a lot of difficult friction moments. And we had to create a specific purpose for that specific campaign, we called it project, that we all aligned in, but we didn't 100% all have the same purpose in. So some of us had to kind of have a consequence, you know. There was some sort of thing that we were lacking that fed our souls, but we did it for the wider purpose. And I find that with organizations as well, that you can go into an organization and the whole thing might not, you know, speak to you properly, but you do it anyway for the money, or you do it for the career stepping stone ladder. But you're sitting there and like everything they're doing is not aligned with you. So that was a really interesting game of how much purpose or how much of myself can I take away to allow this thing to happen, or to be part of this system or program or whatever you call it. And I've started to, since that journey, that Atlantic Road journey, I've started to apply that to everything I do, you know, my relationships, my work, everything. And I've realized that I can't get almost 100% everything I want, which is fine, but I can get quite a good 80% in most places. And as long as some areas speak my purpose stronger than others, it seems to balance well. But that was a big adventure in understanding that balance and how I fit in with the rest of society once I've discovered what I cared about the most and my purpose and why and things.
Yeah, I love that. And was there an actual purpose that you wrote down between you? Was there a defined one that you had?
Yeah, it was to get across to the other side, having done certain things that made each of us happy. So we all had a list of things that would make us happy. One was, if a whale came, could we swim with it? Or, you know, it's just fun things, right? I would like to be able to have a Christmas Day, for instance, Christmas Day, where I can, you know, call my family and I can relax and not do anything for a bit, not row for a bit. Can you make that happen? And so someone would do more rowing shifts to allow that person to do all of that. Others had other things where around the type of food that they wanted, or it was just like certain things that would make us happy. And it was a bit of a compromise, but the goal was to get to the other side having had a great time and enjoy the whole journey. And we did. It was tough because when it got to sort of midway, we had to remind ourselves what the goals were and things like that, because if you're so driven and you're so purpose-led and you know this is ingrained in you, sometimes your ultra self can be like come out a bit. And we had to have, you know, several meetings on this Atlantic boat, several meetings, which was hilarious. People said, you had meetings on the boat? And I said, yeah, we had to back, you know, get us back onto the same track, because people go off in different directions over time. You give a person a task and you come back at the end of the week, I can guarantee they most likely haven't done the exact thing that you were going, what you planned. But that was kind of the case on the Atlantic. We had to constantly touch base on it. But yes, that was the main goal. That was the common goal.
And it's so important that you had defined those before you'd left, because the mindset and the adversity of the challenge would have shifted a lot of things for you. Wow, Isaac, I honestly could talk to you about all of these different adventures for ages. It's just so fascinating. Thank you for sharing them. How would people get in touch with you or get involved in your next adventure?
Oh, yeah. I'm always interested in people getting involved in adventures. And I like to, you know, help motivate people to do them. You get in touch with me at isaackenyon.com, and there you'll find, you know, my email and all the social media links, LinkedIn, Instagram, all of that. So that's the best place to go to get involved.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing. It's been a real privilege to be able to share your journey here. Have you got some final words, please, for the audience?
Yes, I do have some final words. I'd like to read, and I think that sometimes reading is a great way to also get inspiration and things like that. So if there was a book that you were looking to read that is around, you know, why and purpose and things like that, I'm holding it to Amy to see, but it's called Lost Connection, and it's written by Johan Hari. And I've read this book, and it's really interesting around, you know, depression, anxiety, but also around why. It came to me after I developed my own why and purpose, but I kind of wish I had read it at the time when I was going through a difficult phase. But it's a great book, incredible perspective. So
it is a great book, and I'm just going to jump in and share that I have read that several times because I have listened to it. It's a great book to listen to. What specifically is the message that you would like to leave the audience from that book or from your experience?
My message to everyone is to not be afraid of your own creativity.
How has this conversation had an impact on you? What value have you received from tuning in? What are your reflections with actions? Please take a moment to leave me an Apple Podcast or Spotify review sharing how Focus on Why has made a difference to you today. Remember, the conversation doesn't end here. To keep it going, simply connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook or Twitter, or join the Focus on Why Facebook group. All the links are in the show notes. Have a purpose, have a plan, focus on why.